Hi, this is Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo, and I am here to share with you some practical tips on using fitness to control blood sugar, and also to share some of the science behind it. As usual, the information I'm presenting is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional, nor is it to be construed as medical advice. It's a sharing of information from my research, my clinical experience, and my countless hours coaching patients and clients, and I encourage you to share this with your own clients with the same caveat that it's not medical advice, it is simply a sharing, and it's an educational process for them to run by their doctor if they're under the care of one. One thing that's a universally accepted fact is that trained muscle clears glucose more effectively than untrained muscle, meaning that if you're fit and you move and you exercise and you eat and the sugar goes up, then the trained muscle is going to clear that. It's going to utilize. It's going to be less insulin resistant than muscle will be if you're unfit. In other words, trained muscle is more efficient at utilizing glucose and reducing insulin than is untrained muscle. So if you have trained muscle and your glucose goes up, it's much more rapidly going to come down. And that means that if you do eat something that causes your blood sugar to go up, you can use exercise to bring it back down, especially if you're fit. So let's look at the types of exercise that's been studied and how it affects blood sugar and why it affects blood sugar. 30 seconds of full intensity exercise elevates growth hormone, and it does so more than 30 minutes of moderately intense aerobics. And the good news about that is that the growth hormone stays elevated for about 90 minutes after 30 seconds of full intensity exercise. And here's another really good fact. Repeated exercise bouts during the day, well apart in time, produce a significantly greater total growth hormone secretion. And I've given you a reference if you want to look a little bit deeper into that. So let's look at some graphs. Let's look at how this has been studied. So the upper curve is a 30-second all-out exercise burst, and the peak is the secretion of growth hormone. You can see that it goes up very much higher than the lower curve, which is 30 minutes of aerobics. So you can see 30 seconds, it's more economical than doing 30 minutes of aerobics. Not to say that aerobics isn't a good thing to do. Aerobics firms and strengthens cardiac output and all this better than 30 seconds, obviously. But for growth hormone, for pure and simple burning fat and putting on lean, 30 seconds of all-out exercise is going to raise growth hormone more effectively than 30 minutes of aerobics. If you do a second sprint at 60 minutes, so you do another 30-second all-out burst 60 minutes after the first one, it doesn't really do much to the growth hormone. It just continues to go down after it spikes. The optimal timing of the bursts appears to be 120 minutes up to 4 hours. So let's look at this a little bit more closely. Let's look at the growth hormone response to intense exercise. Here's three graphs. One is a control, one is a delayed exercise bout, meaning that they started new 30-second bursts 4 hours apart. You can see the first exercise bout brings the growth hormone up to a certain peak and then it starts to fall down. It seems to fall down pretty significantly after about 90 minutes, but it's still elevated at past that. But by the time the 4 hours rolls around, it's back down to baseline. Another 30-second burst is done. And if you look, the growth hormone peak is higher than the first one. Okay, that comes back down. And then at 4 hours again, another 30-second peak brings the growth hormone up even higher. So it would appear that 4 hours is actually the ideal spacing. If you look at the third graph, that's what's called sequential exercise bouts. And a new exercise bout is begun after 90 minutes, which we would think, okay, 90 minutes, it comes down and it goes back up again. And it's quite good, the response. You get a growth hormone spike. It comes back down. It's almost all the way back down to baseline, not quite. And then it goes up again to about the same level. Comes back again, 90 minutes, almost all the way down to baseline, but not quite. Goes back up and then comes back down again. And if we look at clock time, the reason for those later ones are the natural rising of growth hormone later in the day towards bedtime. So you can see that the most efficient and effective way to burn fat, increase growth hormone, and get blood sugar under control is to do these delayed exercise bouts spaced 4 hours apart. Well, doesn't mean you do all that many of them, right? Now, does it mean that if you can only fit in 3 of those during the day and you get this sequential increase, that that would be better than doing 8 of them? Well, no, because the cumulative effect of the increase in growth hormone doing 8 of those bursts is going to be better than the effect of doing less of the 4-hour spread. Obviously, there's only 24 hours in a day, and if you were up 24 hours, the max you could get would be 6. But anyway, it's very interesting to look at and keep this in mind as you're designing an exercise program or working with your clients in designing an exercise program that's going to fit their busy lifestyle and also is going to be efficient at lean muscle building, fat burning, and keeping their glucose managed. So let's take a look at a few other things related to exercise. It appears that walking doesn't have much of an effect on insulin resistance. Aerobic exercise decreases cardiac risk, though, through mechanisms other than insulin regulation. When you do 30 to 40 minutes of moderate walking, it does reduce cardiac risk by 40% and cancer risk by 35%. So even if you're not seeing the changes in blood sugar and insulin resistance, it's still important to include aerobic exercise. But the interesting thing is that the walking seems to decrease cancer and cardiac risk almost as much as high-intensity aerobic exercise. Plus, it's easier on the body, and you're much more likely to get people to do some walks. And here's the kicker. The benefit of walking is equal or better when it's broken up into multiple 10-minute sessions than if it happens all at the same time. So that's really good news for your busy clients who can't fit in 30 to 40 minutes of walking, but could easily find 10-minute intervals throughout the day to do it. So this is really good news for busy people. So let's look at the bottom line, some exercise guidelines for blood sugar control. What I recommend is 30-second all-out bursts, such as sprint, bike sprint, short bout exercise with weights every 4 hours or so to maximize growth hormone. Now, you could also do things in between that are less intense and have those more intense things spike it up. If you do a short session of burst exercise 2 hours after the evening meal, it's really good at clearing nutrients and clearing glucose so that you are better prepared for fat burning during sleep. If you recall, insulin and growth hormone don't coexist well. When you eat and the insulin levels go up, the growth hormone levels naturally go down. So when we look again at these burst exercises, if you eat in between the bursts, the insulin is going to come out and the growth hormone is going to drop. That's why I recommend about 90 minutes before and after exercise for eating. Obviously, if you're training for a marathon, you're doing really heavy duty, intense exercise, you may need to eat sooner than that. But really, the most efficient and effective way to do it, according to the biochemistry, is 90 minutes before, 90 minutes after exercise for eating. 30 to 60 minutes of walking most days at a brisk, comfortable pace is going to help with burning calories and keeping the heart strong. Not necessarily bringing glucose down or reversing insulin resistance, but it's certainly going to mitigate the negative effects of the insulin on the cardiac system. So very important to include in a program. And then it's much easier to fit in 10 to 15 minute brisk walking intervals than to do longer ones, and it's just as effective and may even be more effective. So bottom line, growth hormone maximizing exercise routine. Start the day with 2 to 3 minute burst type exercises in the morning on arising. That means that you go as hard as you can and at a pace that you can maintain for 2 to 3 minutes, so that at the end of 2 to 3 minutes, you're like, can't do anymore. Follow that, ideally 90 minutes later, by a no-carb or low-carb breakfast. Now, you'll see that interferes with the eat within an hour of waking up. And each person's going to have to experiment with this. So you may have to break one of the rules in order to be practical, but look at it and see which rule works better for the person to break. 30 to 60 minutes of walking in 10 to 15 minutes intervals if they need to. Add sprints to the normal jogging. So if somebody's already doing jogging, swimming, cycling, add some sprints, some 30-second all-out sprints to that routine for maximum growth hormone effect. Then do 2 minutes of burst-type exercise 2 hours after the evening meal. It reliably lowers the after-meal blood glucose by 20 to 40 points. And then, of course, no food after exercise and before bed. Ideally, no food for 90 minutes after you finish exercise, and certainly for 3 hours before bed. Your growth hormone will peak after falling asleep within about an hour, and that's going to help to maximize your growth hormone, maximize lean muscle building, and maximize fat burning.